Hey everyone, this is Stelly Efty.
And this is Heaton Shaw.
And in today's episode, we're going to talk about how to deal with first world problems.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life, and hopefully while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
Yeah, we want you to do your best.
The funny thing is, just before hitting the record button, I was like, well, how do you deal with first world problems, Heaton? And Heaton was like, I don't know, let's figure it out on the episode. Okay, so here's why we're even talking about this. So lately, I've been encountering a lot of people approaching me with their problems and challenges. And even I, honestly, even I've been a little bit in a rut having to deal with some challenges and problems of my own. But realizing that all the problems that I encounter and the things that people encounter around me that at least are in my sphere are first world problems. They're not, I mean, a problem is a problem. Doesn't matter if it's a first world or 10th world problem. On some level, whatever your challenges are as a human being are your challenges, big or small, good or bad. It's the thing that will bother you or keep you on your toes or whatever. But on the flip side, I find it important to find some way to realize that the problems and challenges we're dealing with most of the time as entrepreneurs are first world problems, are luxury problems, are not really life or death issues. So they don't have to be approached with that rigidity of and that like terror of, oh my God, if I don't figure this out, the world will end. But maybe with a little bit more playfulness, maybe life needs to be lived a little bit with a level of appreciation and gratefulness. So this is just a very foggy idea or theme that's been on my mind over the past few days. So whenever we have something that is on our mind or bother us or keeps us busy, we tend to talk about it on the podcast. So that's kind of how we got here, right? But let me ask you, would you agree that most of the challenges and problems that you're currently dealing with in your life and the problems that people come to you with, we could consider first world problems?
You know, I think I really like this topic because it's something I think everybody deals with, you know, if they aren't, you know, homeless or, you know, begging for food or, you know, in a third world country. And that's why we call it first world problems, right? And I define this as just things that we worry about that, you know, aren't that important, aren't really going to impact us. Like, we don't have to worry about, most of us, you know, we don't have to worry about food, don't have to worry about shelter. And all, you know, if you have food, you have shelter and you have some kind of income, what are you worried about? And, you know, when you're in your day-to-day, worried about your business, worried about your job, worried about your life, like your spouse and, you know, or your girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever, you can just get caught up in, I guess, first world problems. And so, I mean, to me, it's like when you're in that mode, you know, there's a lot of different tricks. And I know some of them, not even tricks, but tactics, but then some of them I know, Stelly, you and I have talked about on and off air. But like, basically, you know, it's really, really key to remember that like I'm here right now and all I really need to deal with is what's in front of me. And I don't need to go blow it out of proportion. You know, I don't need to go take it so seriously. I just need to be present right now and just deal with what's in front of me. And that to me has been really helpful when I recognize that I'm getting really caught up. I'm really getting caught up in something that's probably not that useful. And I'm going to give one recommendation that's a little offshoot. And then I'm sure you've got some thoughts about kind of, you know, examples and stuff, because this would be great with examples and what you and I do about it. Cause I know that can be helpful, but Jeff Bezos has something called a regret minimization framework. And it really came to mind right now. And he says something like, basically the way I'll TLDR it and stretch it out, so it's not just about new opportunities and stuff, because he's talking about how he started Amazon and how he created this just quick framework to say, am I going to regret this decision, you know, in 20 years? Or am I going to regret not making this decision in 20 years, right? And a way to take that and apply it to first world problems is basically like, is this even going to matter? Is this even going to matter tomorrow? Is it going to matter a year from now? Is it going to matter 5 years from now? Is it going to matter 10 years from now? And related to that, another thing he talks about, again, a lot of this context is in the context of startups and ideas and businesses, but it still applies to personal life. is focus on the things that aren't going to change. And I think he's done a brilliant job, right? Like at Amazon, everyone's going to always want to buy stuff. Always, not change. It might change what they buy and all that, but they're always going to buy stuff. So we should be the one-stop shop.
Yeah, and they'll never want to wait longer for their stuff or pay more money for their stuff.
You got it. They always want everything for free. That's never going to change. So let's get close to free. So I think, you know, it really, really, really hits home, you know, in this conversation, because we tend to get caught up. We get caught up in the day-to-day. We get caught up in our current problem. And instead of doing that, just think to yourself, step back, ask yourself, is this going to matter? And depending on how heavy the problem is, you know, currently, you could decide whether you're like, is it going to matter in a year? Is it going to matter tomorrow? Is it going to matter in 10 years? And then I think you just need to have these like tactics to step yourself out of kind of whatever's in your head and your day-to-day and get into this space, basically, where you're just here and dealing with it and not getting caught up in all these things that today, in the moment, don't actually matter.
Yeah, I love that. Another way of doing this, which is a technique that I sometimes use myself, is just writing down the worry that you have. Hey, I'm afraid whatever, my business is going to be bankrupt. And then just keep asking the question, what will happen next? And then writing down the answer, well, if my business goes bankrupt, what will happen next? Well, then I'm going to be a failure and everybody's going to be laughing at me. Okay, and what will happen next? Well, I'm going to be, you know, not run out of money in 2 months. Okay, and then what's going to happen next? Well, I'm going to have to look for a job and work somewhere. Okay, what's going to happen next? Well, I'm going to then, I don't know, just work and make some money. Okay, and what will happen next? Well, probably at some point I'm going to have another idea and try it again. Okay, and then what will happen next? Right? And then eventually you get to a point where you're like, all right, this ain't that bad. Right? Because usually we just think about the next, like when we're worried or afraid of something or we have a problem, we think about the immediate consequence that we don't like, which is, oh, if I argue with my co-founder, I'm really afraid that this business is not going to work out, right? Which is a terrible thing or can be a terrible thing, but that's just the immediate kind of short-term impact. But if you think about it in a long enough timeline, it's not as relevant anymore. Over a 10-year, 20, 30-year timeline, it might be totally irrelevant or might be something that was super important, a pivotal moment for all your success and all you've accomplished and all your hopefully happiness in life. So I think that when you continue the, okay, what happens next if this really happens, a worst case scenario, eventually you get to a point where you're like, ah, that ain't that bad. You know, if I go just to think long term enough about things, I don't get caught up as much. And I love that example from Jeff Bezos. And we talked about in episode 97 of the Startup Chat, 97, we talked about how to worry in business productively. So that's an episode where we talk about a lot of tactics on that level. I think for me, one thing that I try to do, that I do on and off, and whenever I'm not doing it, I usually, it catches up with me, is trying to have a moment in the day where I practice gratitude. And I know that sounds funny because it doesn't sound like the type of thing you could practice, right? It sounds like one of these things that you just have or you don't. But I really truly believe that gratitude is like, it's an you have to be proactive to be grateful. It's not just, it doesn't just fall from the sky. You have to practice it to get better at it. And for me, it's just things like doing small exercises, like taking a moment in the day, usually in the morning, and ask myself, what am I grateful for in my life, right? What is something I appreciate? What is something I'm grateful for? What are the things that are in my life that are good and that I am lucky to be surrounded with? What can I say thank you for? And just doing that, if you really do it, if you don't just like, sometimes I do it just to do it and I just write down something, but I don't really feel the feeling. I don't really fully concentrate on it. I just write it down and move on with my life. But if you really take the moment to really be grateful for the riches in your life, for the blessings in your life, it can be a pretty powerful feeling. And that feeling can carry you throughout the day as a reminder and as an anchor when things happen, when things inevitably go wrong in life, when problems come up, right? Things go sideways and you worry or you're upset or you're depressed or you're pissed at something. And it reminds you, to me at least, if I practice gratitude in the morning by asking a simple question like that, it really helps me kind of anchor the entire day through it.
Yeah, I have a friend and she'll just tell me, hey, can you just practice gratitude? And usually she does that when like I'm just cranky and it's not like food or something like that. And it works, you know, and I won't do it right away. But then when I do it, it brings up these happy feelings. And you stop worrying about these problems and you just start thinking about like, you know, what am I actually grateful for? What am I thankful for? And so I really like that. It's just a good way to get out of your own head, a good way to think about other people, and even a good way to think about the things you're happy about, even if it's not other people.
Yeah. And I truly believe that in a weird way, appreciation is the currency we pay the universe with. I think that the more it seems to me that the more we appreciate, the more we are in that state of appreciation and gratitude, the more, maybe because of our focus, we see the things that are good and we attract more of these things into our lives, or we, you know, put more energy into these things that then pay more dividends and returns. But really, when I'm in that state, good things happen usually, versus when I'm in that cranky, ungrateful, first world problem, you know, state, then more problems show up or more things show up to be in that state. So it is kind of these things tend to intensify themselves as you give them more and more focus. There's another thing about first world problems that's interesting. There was a guy, he's one of the kind of a very interesting, colorful character, very controversial, but he did a lot of experimental stuff with hypnotherapy and with like general therapy, mostly in the 70s and 80s. And I watched a few tapes of his back in the day, like group sessions and stuff like that. And people would ask him questions and he would answer and how he approaches therapy and all that. And then one day I remember him taking one of these questions all kind of anonymously by the audience, submitted in kind of paper form. And he reads the question. It's about like, what was the most difficult patient you ever had to deal with or something like that? And he took a moment to think about it, and then he was like, you know what? The most interesting thing about this question is the premise of it, which is usually like when you learn therapy or when you're working with people that have, you know, real mental challenges, the goal that most therapists have, the goal that most people have that work with other people is to succeed. So when you deal with somebody and what you've learned or what typically your typical approach doesn't work, we tend to see that as a bad thing. So we get rigid and we try more of it, or it challenges our worldview or it challenges our self-worth. So it turns from a, I'm trying to help this person, to a, why is this not working paradigm, which makes everything worse. He's like, I don't think of people as like, I don't think of therapy sessions as easy and hard. Oh, who was the hardest patient I've ever had to work with? I just think of therapy sessions as simple or interesting, right? So, and if you think in that paradigm, what other people would call this was a really difficult case, to me, it's like, this was a really interesting case. The shit I always do that works didn't work. Huh. Like if my response is curiosity and it goes, huh, this is interesting. This is unusual. This is going to help me learn more, try new things. Let's go crazy. This person doesn't respond to the normal things that work. Let me see if I should do something weird or new or, you know, and see what happens. And instead of seeing it as interesting, instead of seeing it as challenging or difficult, if you see it as interesting, it changes your biochemistry, your internal feelings, your state, and then the way you're going to work and usually the results you're going to generate. And I thought that was really a profound thing and it stayed with me. And I try to remind me of not saying, oh, this is a really difficult problem, but saying this is a really interesting problem, or this is a very difficult time that we're going through versus a very interesting time, a time that can help me grow, help me learn, help me try new things. I think that paradigm, especially with first world problems, is something that a lot of times makes us suffer, is that we become rigid because we think of these things as difficult and challenging versus interesting and opportunities to learn and change.
It's like the same sort of tactic as like, you know, you are about to go on stage, you know, to speak and you're nervous. And, you know, the best advice is turn it into excitement. And you know, just convert it and really like find a way to convert that energy you have that makes you scared and fearful into excitement for sharing, you know, if nothing else. And so, yeah, I really like the idea of just converting your feelings into something much more positive. Otherwise, you'll just paralyze yourself. And I think that's really what the key is here in with this first world problems is like, it's really easy to sit there and get caught up and then you're paralyzed. You're actually not doing anything to change your situation. And that's like the worst thing you can do to yourself. And I'll give an example. So let's say, you know, you have somebody who, you know, this just happened to a friend. So I'm sure he won't mind me sharing it without saying his name and the company. And, you know, and this is a common thing. I've been through this before. And I think, you know, basically there's a team member on his team and the team member just, you know, needs to not be on the team anymore. And he told me today, I wake up and I'm like not happy. And he knew why. And it's like, why? Well, I'm going to have to get rid of him. And I'm like, how many days? He's like, you know, since the last time we talked, I'm like, for a week? He's like, yeah. And, you know, now that we're talking about this, I'm like, I didn't tell him this because I didn't think of this, but it's a first world problem. You have a business, you have a company, you have a whole bunch of team members, and this one person isn't performing and you know what needs to happen, but you have this angst over it for multiple days. Why would you do that to yourself? Right? Like get to terms with it. If you can't, for some reason, you know, let that person go yet in terms of like, you know, they're working on something or whatever it may be, then that's fine. But don't drive yourself crazy over it. Come to terms with it. Because the day after you do it, it's actually not going to matter anymore to you. It won't even matter to that person. They're off looking for a new job, right?
Yep. Yeah, I love that. That reminds me of this saying that's like, problems are mandatory, but suffering is optional. Right.
Oh, and, that's good.
And that really is what it is. It's like, we have this problem. You have to let go of this person. It sucks. It's not a pleasant thing to do. It's not a pleasant situation to be in. It's a problem, right? That you have to deal with. But what turns the problem into suffering is that week, sometimes it's months of you carrying that around with you without acting on it because you don't want to, right? And then you just turn it into human suffering. You suffer, probably that person is suffering in some ways that you might not even realize because they feel that something is lurking and something's going to happen or whatever, that you feel a certain way about them. Whatever it is, but we all have to deal with problems, but we don't necessarily have to suffer through them. It's just if we cling on to them or if we just let go and deal with it. And most of the times we're not acting immediately. We decide not to act and not to do anything and be paralyzed by it. And then we decide to just carry it around with us and use it as a way to suffer, which sucks, but seems to be a very human thing that the more you can overcome it, the better the world is, I think.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, think about it. If he would have came to terms with it 7 days ago, he wouldn't have been dragging it along in his head as he did things. And I'm sure it was impacting everything he did, you know, because that's just how these things are. They drag on you. I mean, you've run a business. I've run a bunch of business. So have you. And, you know, it's not easy getting rid of somebody, you know, from your company, but it's also not something you should suffer over.
Yeah. Now, one thing that's interesting is that when it comes to first world problems is that you want to acknowledge that there's still problems, right? It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter if it's a small one or a big one. It's still, every human has to deal with problems, right? And to them, these are their problems, right? I mean, I can't. People will not just because somebody is not sick or starving doesn't mean that they don't have problems, right? Or they don't have things that they worry about. They don't have things that challenge them, right? It just means that so when people come to you and they communicate issues with you that in your world from your perspective don't seem as tragic but to them seem like, you know, world shattering and really, really dramatic, how do you deal with it when giving advice or when trying to be a friend but at the same time so you don't recognize the problem at the same level that the person does, but you want to be empathetic with them? What's your approach?